We're only in the third chapter of Mark's Gospel, and they're not the longest chapters, and already we've had five separate clashes between Jesus and the religious elite. So early on in the Gospel, there have been confrontations about whether Jesus can forgive, confrontations about his disciples not fasting, confrontations about eating with tax collectors and sinners, confrontations about plucking grain on the Sabbath, and now this fifth and final confrontation here, the healing of the man with a withered hand on the Sabbath. And at first glance, these final six verses, the healing on the Sabbath, can be lumped together with the others, one string of controversies after another. But I think it's important that we stop and we take this one out and look at it in detail tonight. And the reason for that is it's the climax of all of the previous confrontations. In the previous four, the Pharisees have never been as agitated as they are here. Did you see what happened in verse 6, chapter 3, verse 6? When Jesus healed this man, the Pharisees went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians against him how they might destroy him. The strongest reaction they've had up to this point in the Gospel. But even more striking is Jesus' action here. Verse 5. As Jesus looked around the synagogue that day, Mark says he looked at them with anger. With anger, grieved by the hardness of their hearts. This is the only time in the whole Gospel of Mark that he uses this word anger to describe Jesus. Even when Jesus goes and he clears out the temple, Mark doesn't use language as strong as this. With anger, he looks around at them. This confrontation, this conflict, this question of healing on the Sabbath mattered to Jesus. It mattered a huge amount. And that's why I wanted to take it out and look at it tonight. Why was this so important to Jesus? Why did it make him so angry to see the Pharisees opposing the healing that day? So I want just to unpack this narrative with us tonight. And just two very simple points. Firstly, looking at the Pharisees that day. At their approach, at their problem with the healing. And then secondly, looking at the man with the withered hand, and the miracle that happened to him. So the Pharisees, why were they opposed to this healing? Seems fairly innocent, doesn't it? Jesus only had to speak a word. He didn't really have to work at all, and the man was healed. Wasn't an intensive surgery required. It wasn't a really labor-filled activity. Why did the Pharisees not want Jesus to heal him on the Sabbath? Well, to answer the question, we need to understand how the Pharisees approached the law. See, the Pharisees took the law that had been handed down from God through Moses to them, very, very seriously. They treated it as something divine. They rightly treated it as something sacred to be protected. And in their minds, the best way to do that was to fence off the law. Think of it perhaps like a young tree. This year I planted two young apple trees in my garden. And they're young and they're very fragile. And I live next to a farm, and sometimes you get various animals and cows coming over the fence and trying to strip the leaves and the bark off them. So it's good to have a high fence around them. You protect these vulnerable trees. You keep them safe. And it was something like that that the Pharisees wanted to do with the law. They wanted to protect the law. They wanted to make sure that they or others didn't break the commandments that God had given to them. So here they've taken the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. And over time, they'd added a fence around it, a fence of their own rules, of their own traditions. So, for example, they were worried that people might break this commandment by walking too far on the Sabbath. They didn't want people to waste the Sabbath walking to and fro unnecessarily. And so they added a tradition. They added a fence to say, okay, you can only walk this distance on the Sabbath, but no more. Or the question of healing. They didn't want people to be going around spending the whole Sabbath fixing broken bones and patching up wounds when they could just wait till the next day. So they added this tradition, this fence to say, we don't want you to heal on the Sabbath unless it's an emergency. And they built up over time, layer upon layer, these traditions, which in their minds would protect the law, would keep them from ever breaking God's commandments. It sounds good, doesn't it? Sounds like they were doing the right thing. Shouldn't we take the law seriously? Isn't it a good thing to love God's law so much that we build a fence around it, we protect it, so we don't even get close? Isn't this what God would have wanted when he gave the law through Moses? So what's the problem? Why is Jesus so angry as he looks around at them that day? Well, the answer comes in the very simple, this beautifully simple question that Jesus poses them as he looks around at them. Verse 4, is it lawful? You see how he turns the tables on them, asking them about the law they take so seriously. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? What Jesus is doing is he's going back to the very heart of the commandment, back to the very purpose of the law, to the essence, the epitome of God's law given through Moses. We know, don't we? We know that we can summarize the whole law in two very simple commandments. Love God and love your neighbor. And in a single word, the whole of the law summed up in the word love. Loving the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. Loving our neighbor as ourselves. This is the purpose, the essence of the law. And with this very simple question, Jesus is reminding the Pharisees what it's all about. Why the law was given. To do good and not evil. To save life and not to kill. That is why God gave you the law. And with this question, Jesus starts to expose the hearts of the Pharisees. On this Sabbath day, had they loved their neighbor as themselves? Had the Sabbath commandment fueled their love for their neighbor? The answer is very clear when we see how they approach this man with the withered hand. It wasn't just that they didn't care about his condition. It wasn't just that they were happy for him to remain and to suffer further. It's that they were using him as bait, like a worm on a hook, to lure Jesus in and trap him. They were so far from loving him, wanting the best for him, that they were just manipulating him to get Jesus into a position where they could have an excuse to attack him. And what about the pinnacle of the law, loving the Lord their God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength? Were they doing this? Well, we saw, didn't we, verse 6, this strong, strong language. They went out and plotted with the Herodians, who were their enemies, their arch enemies. They plotted with the Herodians how they might destroy Jesus. See, when Jesus looked into their hearts that day, he saw a hatred of their neighbor. And he saw a hatred of their God. In fact, a hatred so strong that they were willing to destroy their God. And that's why Jesus was so angry. That's why he was so grieved, because their hearts were so hard. You know, if we go back to that metaphor of a fence around a beautiful tree, over time, as they built this fence of tradition, what they thought was protecting the law, this fence began to smother the tree that was inside, smother the beautiful law that God had given to them. And over time, all that they cared about was their tradition, until the tree inside had withered and died, and they didn't even notice. And that's why Jesus is angry. These people who claim to be experts in the law, who have piled up law upon law upon law, have crushed the law that God gave to them, have crushed the beautiful, love-filled commandments that God had given to them through Moses. They were hating their God and hating their neighbor that day on the Sabbath. And this is really, really important for us to understand. This isn't a historical introduction to the Pharisees back in Jesus' day. This is important because we often hear, even in the Christian world, we hear that Jesus came to relax the law. Often, in my experience, and I assume in yours also, Christians will come and say, well, look, the Pharisees, they took the Sabbath really seriously. They just accepted what Moses had told them, and Jesus had to come and he had to tell them, look, the Sabbath, it's over. You know, I brought freedom from the law. You don't have to observe it as strictly anymore. You know, if you want to go out and heal, do it. If you want to go out and eat on the Sabbath, do it. Look, don't take it as seriously as you have been doing. But that is, in fact, the complete opposite of what's happening here. You see, Jesus is demanding more obedience from the Pharisees, not less. He's not saying you're doing too much. He's saying you haven't even started to keep this law. Because Jesus, he doesn't just care about what happens on the outside. He doesn't just care that they're sitting there in their seats that day in synagogue. He doesn't just care that they haven't put their hand to work that day, that they haven't walked more than a certain distance. He cares about their heart. And he takes obedience to a whole new level by demanding not only external but internal obedience, a heart of love for their neighbor and for their God. Jesus isn't relaxing the law. He's not doing away with the law as if it's somehow passé. He's saying, I demand far, far more of you than you have been doing. And you know, this scene is going to repeat itself one day. One day Jesus will return. And one day he'll look around at each of us. And not just at the outside. He'll look straight through into our hearts like he did on that day in that synagogue. And one day Jesus is going to look at many with an anger that they have not had a heart of love towards their neighbor. And they have not had a heart of love towards their God. It's so easy for us to think we're keeping the law by doing the external routines, by going through the motions, by sitting in our seat on a Sunday, by taking the day off work and study, and think that's enough. But Jesus demands far, far more. And one day he will look at you and look at your heart and ask you the same question. In your heart, have you done good rather than evil? Have you saved life rather than killed? And if not, he will look around at us with anger and a grief at the hardness of our hearts. Where do we go from here? It's, in some sense, a difficult message to swallow, isn't it, that Jesus comes and he intensifies the law. There's this shocking statement, Matthew 5, verse 20, this statement that sent his disciples reeling. Your righteousness, says Jesus, has to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Unless you're doing better than they are, you're not doing enough. And Jesus in the Gospels, he brings us again and again to this point where we realize we can't do it ourselves. We realize that if the Pharisees, who devoted their lives to this law, if they weren't able to do it, how much less are we able to meet this standard of a loving heart that Christ sets, that he set that day in that synagogue? So where do we go from there? Well, the answer comes in the way that Jesus treats this man with the withered hand. So we look at this man in that synagogue on that day, with the withered hand. This healing is an incredibly significant moment. You see the way that Jesus does it? It's just stunning, isn't it? It's beautiful. He gets the man to stand up, to step forward. And verse 5, all he has to do is to say to the man, stretch out your hand. No long procedure, no complex healing rite, just those simple words, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. And not just restored, restored as whole as the other. Not a partial healing, a perfect act of recreation. Complete healing by divine power. And I really want us to see this evening that, that this healing, as we start to unpack it, is a microcosm, is a small representation of the gospel, of the power that Jesus brings. Because what's really significant, and this just, I only saw this week for the first time, having read this passage many, many times over the past years. What's really significant is that this isn't just a healing, it's also an empowerment. See what happens, Jesus comes and he heals this man and he restores his hand. But what he's also doing is empowering this man to keep the fourth commandment more than he's ever done in his life before. Empowering this man to keep the fourth commandment. The law that the Pharisees had so utterly failed to keep, Jesus empowers this man to do it. You see, what are the components of the fourth commandment? The first is work 6 days. And as Jesus restores this man's hand, he's actually enabling him to go out the next day and to work with a vigor and a power that he's never had before. Jesus has given to him a wholeness and an energy that he's never had. And the fourth commandment isn't just about working 6 days. It's also about resting and delighting in God on the seventh. How do you think this man would have come to worship the next Sabbath? Would he have come with a heavy heart? Would he have come lamenting how cruel God had been to him in his life? Or would he have come with the heart that Jesus delighted to see, a heart that, that rejoiced in how good his God had been to him? Would he have come and worshipped the following Sabbath in a way that he'd never worshipped before, as he'd been healed of his crippling illness? You see, when Jesus comes and when he acts, it's not just an act of restoration, it's an act of empowerment. And the man following this miracle is empowered to keep the Sabbath in a way that the Pharisees, with all of their plotting and all of their legalism, had never been able to do. He'd set that man free. Free to obey the law. Free to delight in God. Free to delight in his neighbor in a new way. Do you notice that it was a costly thing for Jesus to do? It was a costly thing for Jesus to do. He could have easily waited until the next day. Could have waited until sundown when the Sabbath was over, when the Pharisees had dispersed, when the synagogue was empty. He could have secretly called the man to one side and in an alleyway somewhere he could have healed him without anyone noticing. But Jesus didn't do that. He didn't flinch from the confrontation. Before the eyes of everyone, he called the man to step forward. And in front of the whole synagogue, he spoke to him and healed him. And Jesus knew that that would infuriate the Pharisees. He knew that this would simply add fuel to the fire of their hatred, which we saw in verse 6. They went out immediately plotting how they could destroy him. But Jesus' compassion doesn't flinch. His compassion is a selfless compassion, a costly compassion. He's willing to suffer in order to heal those in front of him. And as Mark reports this, he's sowing the seeds for the ultimate cost that Christ will pay, the ultimate act of compassion. As Mark shows us this spiral of increased opposition against Christ that climaxes in the passion narrative, climaxes in his hours on the cross. We see Christ who doesn't flinch from the pain. He doesn't flinch from confrontation. He doesn't flinch from paying the ultimate price in order to have compassion, to bring healing and restoration to his people. This miracle shows us the gospel just in miniature form. It's a beautiful picture, isn't it, of Christ in a costly way showing compassion, but also then empowerment. This is really, really important for us to understand. Because if we try ourselves to keep the law, we're going to end up where the Pharisees are. At the very, very best, we'll be able to keep the law externally. We'll be able to keep the law in the eyes of those around us, our families, our parents, our teachers, our spouses. But we'll never keep the law to the standard that Jesus expects. And when his eyes pierce through to our heart on that day of judgment, if we've been trying to keep the law on our own strength, all we will see in his eyes is anger and grief at the hardness of our hearts. Because we cannot love God as we ought. We cannot love our neighbor as we ought. But the miracle of the man with the withered hand shows us the second way. It shows us that if we come to Christ, and as we hear his healing voice, stretch out your hand, his powerful word coming to us, as we hear his healing and compassionate voice, there is not only complete restoration, complete forgiveness, as we go on to see in the gospel, there is also a new empowerment to keep the law in a way that we've never been able to keep it before. And it's not the man wasn't passive, was he, that day? Yes, it was Christ's power. That there was a response required of the man. Jesus called out to him, stretch out your hand. And the man could have refused. He could have said, Jesus, I don't believe you have the power to do this. He could have said, Jesus, I don't want to provoke the Pharisees. The cost is too high. Leave it. Do it another day. But he didn't. As Jesus spoke these words of power, the man responded. And as he responded, his hand was restored. And tonight that same voice is going out to you, the words of Christ, to stretch out your hand, to receive his healing power. Not the simple act, as it were, of a healed hand, but the phenomenal act of a healed soul, of restoration, spiritual healing and cleansing. And you have a choice. Will you respond like the man and be restored, recreated? Or will you, like the Pharisees, shut off your heart to Christ? So don't think, as we close, don't think that you will be able to keep that law yourself. Perhaps this is especially the challenge for those growing up in Christian homes. It's so easy to think that doing what our parents want is enough. As long as we're saying the right things, as long as we're doing the right things, it's enough. But Jesus raises the bar here 100-fold, and he says, one day I'll look into your heart and I'll know that you haven't had the love that I demand. So come to Christ. Come like that man with a withered hand. Come like one who can't heal yourself. Hear his voice. Respond to his voice. And finally, for those of us who know the healing word of Christ, who know the powerful word of Christ, rejoice in the empowerment Christ gives us to obey. Rejoice that he doesn't heal us and leave us. He empowers us to go out and to keep the law. Not just externally, but to keep the law from our hearts in a way that we could never do before. That his healing touches spirit in us. Gives us something the Pharisees never had, a soft heart. A heart that delights to do good and not evil. A heart that loves to save life and not to kill. A heart that loves the Lord our God more and more each day. So come and respond to the healing words of Christ.